Okay, so please listen to the sound of the bell, and then for a while, please pay attention to your in-breath, out-breath. You know, now we are going to discuss about Dharma, but we cannot discuss about Dharma with our ordinary noisy mind. We need a quiet mind. Okay, so this morning we discussed about Prince Siddhartha, you know? Can you see the light one? You know? I mean, because we have to think of his life. In order to understand mindfulness, you know, usually Buddhist, introductory books say, you know, oh, Siddhartha did 6 years very hard work, hard practice, you know, every day only one rice, you know, then as a result he became like that, you know, nothing, you know, then usually they say, oh, but middle way is very important, you know, middle way is very important. But then what's this kind of fasting, you know, almost very fasting, and middle way, you know. So then about mindfulness, you know, we have to understand all of them together. Otherwise, it's just some kind of someone's story of 2,500 years ago. So it means it has nothing to do with you, you know? But in Buddhism, everything is about you. Not some kind of saint, or not some very special teacher, or even about Prince Siddhartha. But Prince Siddhartha is you, you know? So that's why we have to think of this 6 years fasting, and he gave up, and he went to Buddhagaya, and he attained like that. So what does it mean? This morning we talked about Kapilavastu. Kapilavastu is Prince Siddhartha grew up. You know, it's of course palace, you know? And you can go there. You can go there in Nepal. You know, so in Nepal, so road is very bad. You know, but anyway, from Lumbini it takes for almost 1 hour. You know, and you can visit Kapilavastu. Then we can see exactly Western Gate, Eastern Gate. You know, and from East Gate, Prince Siddhartha left his palace. For what? This morning we discussed, you know, about as long as we live in this kind of condition, I'm talking about like a small house, you know, then any kind of happiness is impermanent, you know, everything is just impermanent. There's no lasting forever thing. even love. You know, we know a very passionate love is also very impermanent. Everyone knows it. You know, and our body, sometimes we are very young and very healthy, you know, no sickness, but still, it's just impermanent. Anyway, we do become old, become sick, you know, like that. You know? So as long as we live in this condition, suffering is inevitable. You know? Then what should we do? One way is not thinking of it, you know. And then concentrate on just like a happiness in front of us, you know. Then how to get it? Well, of course, by money or position, or like the career or like that, you know. Then we just concentrate on these kind of things. But Prince Siddhartha, he had everything. Anyway, he was a prince, you know, and he was supposed to become a king, you know. And he had a very beautiful wife and a baby, you know, like that. So everything, he had everything, you know. But he exactly knew that nothing will save him, you know. Nothing will save him means, not only just a Prince Siddhartha. It's a human being itself, you know. So that's why, you know, he left his palace for what? In order to find the truth. But this truth is not abstract truth. But this truth will save not only him, but all human beings, you know? Like some scientists, you know, they are trying to find a miraculous medicine for cancer or diabetes, like that, you know? For what? For him? No, for human beings, you know? So if we can find miraculous medicine for cancer, then we can save so many people, you know, from cancer. You know? So that's why his practice was from the beginning, not only for himself, but for all human beings. Okay. So then, because he could have become a king, and maybe by doing good politics, you know, he could have made people to live happily. Of course, it's true, you know. But his ambition is too big. So he wanted to save not only people in his kingdom, but all the people, all the human beings, like us, are living after 2,500 years later, you know, like that. So, then, I don't have to repeat, you know, that his story. But anyway, he went to his cave. He found his cave, you know. There's a Buddha Gaya, there's a river, and this side, there's a mountain. And there's a cave. There's a cave. You can still visit this cave, you know. Tibetan monks, they are taking care of this cave, you know, like that, you know. So, a very small cave. But, of course, completely solitude. And maybe not too hot, not too cool, not cold, you know, maybe all year long, maybe comfortable, you know. And then, anyway, because he was doing fasting, just one then he became like that. Well, why? Why people do fasting? For what reason? Only one reason. He wanted to stop his mind. That's it. So as long as we live, and if we have energy, Of course, we have a desire, desire for many things, you know, for money, career, for opposite sex, you like that, you know, so like that. And he knew, okay, this kind of things are causing lots of trouble and lots of suffering. That's why he wanted to stop his mind, you know. So it's then. Fasting, it's more almost like he was approaching to his physical death, right? So physical death, when we die, maybe our mind also will die, you know? We stop, you know? So that's why many practitioners did this kind of things. You know, they are approaching to their physical death. And by approaching to their physical death, they try to stop their mind, you know. But after 6 years, he could not succeed. He could not succeed. You know, of course, we can imagine how hard he practiced, you know. You know, now fasting is like a healthy, you know, oh, I'm doing fasting for 3 days, all good for you, healthy, like that, you know. Of course, his fasting is not like that, you know. Then, according to some legend, you know, some deity told him, oh, you are doing the wrong thing, you know. As long as you stay here, you can never reach true enlightenment. Then he decided to move, you know. But of course, he didn't have any power to walk, you know. So that's why he just walked and he sat down at the foot of some trees. And then village young girl, Sujata, found him and she gave him like milk porridge, you know. Then he got the power. And he went to the river and he washed his body. Then he crossed over this river and he went to Buddhagaya. You know? And he sat down at the foot of the Bodhi tree. At the foot of the Bodhi tree, beautiful seated and peaceful and smiling, you know? Like that. And of course, we went to. We can go to Buddhagaya, but unfortunately, it's so crowded, you know, and the Bodhi tree, so many people, you know, and people are just like this, you know, like that, you know, they are fighting, you know. We sat down on the Bodhi tree. Well, of course, this Bodhi tree is not the Bodhi tree under which Siddhartha sat down, you know. Of course, it's a generation different, you know. But anyway, yeah, almost same place. So, then, okay, by fasting, he tried to stop his mind, and he failed, okay? Then he changed his way of practicing. Then usually people, teachers say, oh, it's a middle way, you know? Middle way, it's okay, but middle way, what do you understand middle way, you know? It's not like usually people think of fasting very hard, you know, and this is a very luxurious life, you know. The middle way is here, you know. No, middle way is not like just between this and here. No, it's not like that, okay? So that's why, you know, not too luxurious, not fasting, not too hard, maybe here, yeah, you know. But maybe this kind of understanding of middle way is very, very shallow, you know. So we have to understand, okay. Anyway, he wanted to stop his mind because this mind is creating your suffering. You know that, you know. Your mind is creating your suffering, you know. So that's why we want stop this mind. Okay, I know this is a crazy mind, you know. This crazy mind is creating lots of suffering. That's why I wanted to stop this crazy mind. And many people tried it. And many people try to do by almost approaching to their physical death. And maybe some of them already died, you know, that, you know. I know that, you know. So then he found, Siddhartha found mindfulness, you know. Why we can say that? Because, anyway, he found some kind of truth under the Bodhi tree. Then he went to Sarnath because he wanted to meet his old friend, five bhikkhus, you know. Five bhikkhus were practicing with his Siddhartha all the time, for the time being, you know. And Siddhartha, already Buddha, you know, already at that time he was Buddha. And he knew this is very difficult. So only people who have practiced very seriously can understand. You know, not ordinary people cannot understand, you know. So that's why he wanted to talk with five bhikkhus. And yes, then five bhikkhus exactly understood, you know, what Siddhartha found. Okay? Then, that's why Buddhagaya and Sarnath, two places are so important, you know. In Buddhagaya, he found the truth. In Sarnath, he could succeed, transmit this truth to other human beings. This is extremely important. Then, after that, Buddha, he started to teach Dharma to the people. Okay? Then he gave instruction of Anapanasati, you know, Anapanasati Sutta. You know? Then he said, Buddha said, you know, you should go to the forest, and you should sit down. You should sit down under the at the foot of some trees, you know. Then you keep your back straight, you know. Then you should establish your mindfulness, and you are breathing in. You know that you are breathing in. You are breathing out, and you know that you are breathing out. Huh? Is this a truth? You know. Then we wonder, you know, we are expecting some more miraculous teaching or like that, you know, miraculous teaching. But he taught us, breathe, Suruchi, you are breathing in, you know you are breathing in. You are breathing out, you know you are breathing out. Huh? It's too simple, you know, too simple, you know. So we are disappointed, you know. Then maybe some people try to do this. Anapanasati, but okay. So then what? Okay, first of all, he wanted to stop his mind, you know, by fasting or many things, you know. And you know, we have been doing very weird things to stop our mind, you know. And even now, like some practitioners, yeah, it's a Japanese Buddhist monk, you know, in the in the middle of winter, you know, Japanese winter is very cold, not like here, you know. So then, like they prepare us like a cold water, you know, cold water. Then, in the middle of winter, you know, six times a day or like that. So this is their practice, you know. You know, like, of course, you know, if we're cold water, of course, our mind, maybe our mind might stop, you know, like that. And some Buddhists, and also Buddhist monks, they just walk in the mountains without stopping, almost 1,000 days, you know, 3 years a little bit, you know. They never come down to the town. They just stay in the mountain. And get up very early morning, and they start walking all day long, you know, every day. Why? We can understand why. Because we push ourselves to the limit, you know, by walking every day or putting cold water. Then everything, why are we doing these kind of things? Only one purpose, to stop our mind. That's it, you know. So why? Because this mind is creating lots of suffering. That's why we want we want to stop our mind. Okay? So anyway, then Prince Siddhartha did a different method, and he found the truth, and he could succeed to transmit this truth to his old friend, and from here, Dharma is spreading, you know? Sariputta and Mahamoggallana, they are from Rajagiri, right? Rajagiri, you know? And they met Buddha, and they became immediately disciple and most important disciple in Buddha's Sangha, you know, like that. So then spreads, Dharma spreads. Then, what kind of method did Siddhartha Prince use? We can guess, you know, by what Buddha taught to us. Then, breathing in, I know I am breathing in, breathing out, I know I am breathing out. Oh, is this a miraculous method, you know? Then we wondered, you know. Then, okay. Then that's why this mindfulness is very tricky. So it's very difficult to understand, you know. We don't need any, of course, in Anapanasati Sutta, they talk about a bit more things, you know, about not only just breathing, you know, we have to pay attention to many things, you know, but it doesn't matter. Breathing in, I know I'm breathing in. Breathing out, I know I'm breathing. That's enough, you know. So then, we have to understand the meaning of this knowing. I know I am breathing in, I know I am breathing out. Because this knowing has a secret. Very, you know, subtle secret. You know? That's why many people miss this secret. You know? Even now, even today. Because mindfulness is very now popular everywhere in America. I was surprised also in India, you know, usually in many areas, you know, therapy area, you know, like enterprise area, you know, like that, and or education, you know, like that. So then we really have to understand the meaning of knowing. Okay. Then already in this retreat we talked about the two kinds of mind, you know, our ordinary mind and different kind of mind, you know. But usually people in this world, they know only one mind, you know, this ordinary mind, nothing else. So who am I? I am just, I have this kind of body, you know, skin, flesh, bone, you know, hair. I don't have hair, you know, but anyway, blood, or like that, you know. And this is and there is a brain, you know. And brain has some kind of mind, you know, mind and emotion, like that. This is it, you know. So, but then this mind, they know only this mind. Then they think, oh, breathing in, I know I am breathing in. Breathing out, I know I am breathing out. It's just activity of this mind, you know. But this mind can know many things, you know. So mindfulness is just such a very secular, ordinary thing, you know. But of course, mindfulness is not only that. We are observing things without any judgment, like dislike and no, without like and dislike or like that, you know. So slightly different from ordinary knowing, you know, but still same. So then we wonder, it's so secular, it's so simple, it's so like a mundane, you know, like that. So, as long as we think we have only one mind, you know, ordinary mind, we will miss the whole point. We will miss the whole point of mindfulness. Okay? Then, what should we do? Maybe only way is you should practice mindfulness very seriously. Very seriously. You know? Maybe just only 5 minutes, by 5 minutes or 15 minutes, you go to any mindfulness class or like that, you know? Then teacher talk a lot, blah, 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 blah. Then let's practice mindfulness for 5 minutes. Then you feel, oh, good, good. Oh, then you say, oh, mindfulness is good, you know, like that, you know. But if you practice very hard, you know, then you should, you try to observe your mind or everything without liking, disliking, without any prejudice or like that. Then you will find it's impossible. It's impossible. You know, so that's why now I'm teaching mindfulness, of course, in Japan. You know, but already many teachers are teaching mindfulness. So my way of teaching mindfulness is totally different from others. You know, because they ordinary mindfulness teacher they never talk about these two kinds of mind. You know, they never. You know, so then. This year, I went to many places in Japan, and I went to one university, you know, and then I talked with one professor, you know. He is a leading professor who has been introducing mindfulness to welfare area, you know, working in the hospital or old age people's house or like that, you know. So, of course, people who are working in that kind of area, they are usually exhausted, you know, exhausted mentally or physically or like that, because they are dealing with a very difficult situation, you know, human being, sickness, old age, or sometimes death, you know, very difficult. They are so exhausted, you know. So that's why he wanted to introduce mindfulness, so that people, such very serious people, can feel better, you know, in their job, you know. So that's, it means they are already working very seriously in their area, you know. Then they are introduced to mindfulness. That's why they practice mindfulness very seriously, you know. Then I went to the meeting, you know, and this professor and his students or his friends or like that, you know. And I said, oh, mindfulness, I'm sorry to say, we cannot practice mindfulness. It's impossible, you know. Then I was expecting maybe they will get upset like that, you know. The professor, he was so happy to hear, listen to my lecture, you know. I said, oh, you cannot practice mindfulness. And he was very happy to hear that. Why? Why? Do you know why? Because he knew it. He knows it. He knew it, you know. He practiced very hard. And he himself and his friends, you know, cannot do it. They can never observe things without any liking and disliking like that. Okay? So, and I'm very happy to know that. Oh, people start to notice it, this impossibility, you know? Like something in this world, we can do it by effort, you know? Like to master some foreign language. It's, of course, I know, everyone knows it's very difficult. But if you go to a school every day, you know, maybe 1 year later, 2 years later, you'll be able to speak any foreign language, you know. It's difficult, but it's still possible, you know. But something we can never do it, like flying in the air. You know, flying, we are not bird, you know. So that's why even if we tried like this, you know, after 1 year, of course, nobody can fly in the air, you know. So then mindfulness, which studying foreign language or flying in the air, you know, usually mindfulness is like studying foreign language. You know, if you practice mindfulness, then one day you will become mindful. You know, mindful, you know. No, I'm sorry. Mindfulness is like a flying in the air, you know. After 1 year, you still cannot fly, you know. You are not you are not bird, you know. So that's why you can never fly, okay. So what does it mean? It means our mind can never become mindful. And by doing, by practicing very hard, we will notice this fact. You know? Then it's a desperate situation. In one sense, yes. But this is the most important point. You know? Why? So, it means with our ordinary mind, we can never become mindful. Why? Because our ordinary mind is opposite of mindfulness. You know? Our ordinary mind is like a monkey mind or young buffalo's mind. Young buffalo's mind, you know, and just jumping around. So our young buffalo's mind, monkey mind, it cannot stay at one place for more than 1 second, you know. It's impossible. So that's why I know I am breathing in maybe 1 second. But the next moment, your mind goes somewhere else, you know? You know. So I know I am breathing in means I know I am breathing in for a long time, not only for 1 second. You know? So that's why monkey mind can never do that. And our ordinary mind is full of liking and disliking, full of prejudice. And this mind already, yesterday we discussed, it's a story-making mind, you know. We pick up only just a few things from the fact which happened in our past. Then we make our own story. So everyone is talking about not their reality, but everyone is talking about their story, you know. A very miserable story or like that, you know, like that. So that's why our ordinary mind is opposite of mindfulness. Okay? Then, and our ordinary mind can never become mindful. Okay? Then what does it mean? Okay, point is, if we have only ordinary mind, then this is a story, end of the story, end of the story, end of the story, that's it, you know. Then you can never become mindfulness. Oh, I'm sorry to say that, you know, that's it. But this is the end of the one story, but then this is a starting point of a second story, you know, second story, you know. But that's why we have to finish, we have to put a period to first story, okay. So we have to make sure many things in this past story. First of all, our ordinary mind can never become mindful, you know. And by training, we can never become mindful, you know. And this ordinary mind has been creating our suffering itself, you know. And our ordinary mind is a story-making mind, you know? So, and usually our ordinary mind is creating the story and we are stuck in this story, like that, okay? Then, okay, we have to make sure this first story, okay? But this is just the end of the first story. Then we can start second story, you know? Second story is, don't worry, you have not only just one ordinary mind. You have something else. Something else. You know? Then something else is a source of mindfulness, source of compassion. You know? So that's why Siddhartha Prince, he tried to stop his ordinary mind by fasting, and he failed. He failed. By using this kind of method, he could never reach the truth, which can save all human beings. You know? Then he admitted that. That's why he left his cave. You know? Then now he needs power, energy. That's why he accepted rice porridge from a village woman. You know? Like that. Okay? Then he washed his body and he went to Buddha Gaya and sat down at the foot of the Bodhi tree. Okay? Then what happened to him, you know? By being mindful, he found like another mind. Okay? He was trying to stop this ordinary mind, and he failed, you know? Then he found mindfulness, you know. Why? Because, you know, we have an ordinary mind and we know this ordinary mind. But we have another mind, another consciousness like that. But point is, usually we don't know it. We don't know it. Then point is, we need some kind of bridge between A and B. A and B. So with that bridge, we cannot know B. We know only A, but we don't know B. So that's why we need a bridge between A and B. You understand? And this is mindfulness. Okay, so mindfulness, maybe I can say maybe two definitions. Mindfulness is a bridge between A and B. But real mindfulness exists only in B. You know? So this is the whole point. So that's why our practices should be like that. First, we should move from A to B by practicing mindfulness, then we can deepen our mindfulness in B. You know? So, that's why first we practice as a mindfulness as a bridge. You know? Because we have been living only in A. You know? And finally we understand as long as we live in this air, suffering is inevitable. You know? We can never escape from suffering. You know? So that's why we need an exit. Exit from this prison. You know? And then this exit is mindfulness. You know? So, well, concretely, in this air, with our ordinary mind. Our ordinary mind is creating just lots of story, and we are stuck. We are stuck in this story, you know, about tomorrow, about our past, you know, like that, you know. Then, at that time, we lost connection with our body. I said many times, you know. So that's why body is very, extremely important, you know. We have a body. But usually we don't have a body because we are living only here in our head, you know. And then as long as we we are in living in our head, our mind is very unhealthy. Unhealthy, you know that. Unhealthy, you know. Very easily, we are stuck with our anxiety. You know, we're making a very anxious story about tomorrow. And also we are making a very bad story from the past, you know. And we are regretting, you know, guilty, or like that kind of things, you know. Or very terrible, you know, terrible things, you know. And then, at the time when we are living in the guilty story, you know, anxious story or angry story, you know, regretting story or like that. Anyway, when we are living like that, at the time we are completely disconnected from our body. Okay? We don't feel it. We don't feel our body. And usually, people become sick very suddenly. One day, they found their body is very sick. But as you know well, our body doesn't become sick very quickly, you know? Little by little, little by little, little by little, little. But because we are disconnected from our body, that's why people didn't notice their body was becoming sick. Then one day, their body became very seriously sick. Then they notice, oh, something was wrong, but a little bit too late, sometimes, very often like that. You know? So, because only very serious sickness, or only very strong pain, we can feel it. But small things we cannot feel, because we are disconnected. You know? That's why, by paying attention to our body, we can get out of this prison, you know? Then, by practicing compassion and mindfulness, we can find totally different realm, totally different dimension. You know, like that. So I said mindfulness is a bridge, but also there's another bridge. It's of course compassion. We are already practicing it, no? Why? Because compassion also exists only in this different realm. In our this small house, there's no compassion. And that's why if you do compassion meditation, you feel bad. You feel just in very hypocritical, you know, like that. May all beings be well and happy. Sounds very hypocritical, you know, for in this area, in this house, you know. So that's why by practicing these two, mindfulness and compassion as a bridge between A and B, then little by little we can change the situation, you know. Then we are discovering totally new dimension, you know. Then, of course, I know, people says, I am insecure, I'm very anxious, you know, many things, suffering, lots of suffering, you know. So unless you find this different realm, you will feel always insecure, always anxious, always like that, you know. So in this world, so many things will happen. No, I know that. And inevitably, we cannot avoid suffering in this world. But as long as you find your true self exists here, not here, then it's a saranam. Buddhan saranam gacchami, dhamman saranam gacchami, sangham saranam gacchami. What's a saranam? It's a safe place. Safe. Absolute safe place. You know? So, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, you know, we take refuge, you know. But more concretely, we take refuge in this different realm. Okay? So that's why I know in this world full of suffering. But if you can find this different realm, you'll be okay. This is not theory, but this is not like something which you have to believe in. It's not like that. You yourself can find, you yourself can realize, you can, yourself can feel it. You know? So Siddhartha Prince, he wanted to find such kind of place. And he tried to do it by stopping, by trying to stop his mind. But he failed. And then finally, he found another dimension. Another dimension. You know? Then he taught us how to go there. Through mindfulness. By knowing I am breathing in, I am breathing out. So this knowing is not ordinary knowing. No, this knowing belongs to this different level. You know? Because this knowing belongs to this different realm, that's why we can know that I am breathing in, I am breathing out for a long time, not for just for 1 second. Okay? So this is a secret of mindfulness. This is a secret of middle way. Middle way. You know? Middle way is not like just half, you know? Not half, you know? middle way is like that. Not like fasting, like almost dying. Not like indulging in some luxurious things, you know? Not like that. No? But luxury things, searching for something more luxurious, more driven by our desire, we try to stop our mind by almost by dying, you know? Not like that. But we try to find different realm by practicing mindfulness. So that's why, without this kind of understanding, mindfulness doesn't make any sense, you know. But now, many people are interested in mindfulness everywhere, in Japan also. Then already, first stage of mindfulness is now finishing, you know. How? They found it's impossible. they found it's impossible. Then second stage is now starting. Because by failing mindfulness in first stage, we will find, because we practice mindfulness with our ordinary mind, that's why we failed. And the point of mindfulness is not like that. Point of mindfulness is to find different realm, you know? Then already everything is connected with Siddhartha Prince, Buddha, Bodhi Tree, or like that, like the middle way, or like that. Then we can understand everything like this. Okay, I'll accept any question.
Transform.
Usually, you know, like I was teaching this kind of mindfulness for many years, at least 10 years. Since I came back from Myanmar, you know. And then, but many Japanese people found it very difficult to understand, you know. But then, just these few years, some people started to understand, you know, like, you know, with our ordinary mind, you know, we are living in this world. We are living, we are doing daily activities, you know, daily activities. You know? Then suddenly, different realm is opening up. You know? Then, I don't belong to this world. I belong to another realm. And from this another realm, I'm watching this world. Something like that, you know? So for ordinary people, it's very scary. Why? Because they knew only this world, that's it, you know, I am these kinds of things, you know, and I have mind, I am thinking, wow. But I'm not only just this body and this brain, and this brain is creating lots of thinking and emotion. I'm not only like this, but I am different. I'm different. You know? So, I think many people have this kind of experience. Maybe when they are child, you know, it means children. You know, children, they don't belong to this world completely. You know? They still belong to another world, you know, a little bit. You know, so that's why they are living in this world, but at the same time, they have a taste of a different realm. I mean, children. You know? So that's why sometimes different realms just invades in this world. You know. So then we feel, as I said, we are double structured, you know, we are double structured. In one sense, we are living in this world. But in another sense, we are living also in different realm. You know? So, but because we didn't know that different realm exists, that's why when different realm appears, we became like panicked, like that. But through meditation, you can very easily touch this different realm, you know, by paying attention to your breath, you know, your mind calming down, you know, little by little. And you can know your in-breath, out-breath very clearly for a long time. You know, long time. Then you can feel you are entering into a totally different world, different realm, like that. Okay? So then you are discovering totally new dimension by meditation, you know? Then you will notice how you are double structured, like that. So this is not at all difficult. Actually, many Japanese people are feeling it, you know. But the point is, if we don't explain these kind of things from the beginning, then people miss the point, you know. Then, like people say, oh, samatha and vipassana, you know. And first, when we practice samatha, okay, so it means by concentration, my mind becomes very concentrated mind, you know. And with this concentrated mind, we can observe things as it is. Maybe it's not like that. It's not like that. That's why I'm not using the word samatha vipassana, you know. So, because we are entering into the different realm, and already different mind is functioning, and only mind stop functioning. That's why our only mind is very, you know, like a monkey and a young buffalo. That's why it doesn't move. That's why we can observe things for a long time. Then we can say, oh, this is samatha meditation. Yes, it's true. But it's not because of concentration. I don't like the word concentration at all. Because concentration is very misleading. Very misleading. Why? Because the word of concentration is like ordinary mind seems moving like this, and finally it becomes concentrated. It's not like that. Why? Because this concentrated mind is not ordinary mind. It's already different mind. So it means our ordinary mind become concentrated. It's not like that. The mind is already changed. You know? This ordinary mind can never concentrate because it's a characteristic of our ordinary mind. You know? So something changed. And this different mind doesn't move. This mind is not monkey mind. It's not young ox. Young buffalo mind. Then we can say, yes, this is a concentrated mind. But it's not like this ordinary mind get concentrated. It's not like that. Okay? Then, and this mind cannot observe things as it is. Why? Because this mind is full of liking and disliking, you know? It's impossible. So only this different mind can observe things as they are. So that's why, because people misunderstand samatha and vipassana, everything, because people think we have only ordinary mind. Then by training, we can make this mind concentrated, and we can make this mind observe things as it is. It's not like that. It's like we have two kinds of mind. You know, so point of meditation is not training this mind, but change the mind from A to B. You know, so that's why I'm saying, yes, we are double structured, and we have two kinds of dimension. We belong to two kinds of dimension, and we have two different kind of mind. You know, like that. And point is, we can switch by ourselves from A to B. And the way of switching is a mindfulness. You know? Then we know our ordinary mind and the world of ordinary mind. And we know this different mind, and we know the world of a different mind. And also, most importantly, we can switch from A to B. You know? You can switch it. You know? Because some teachers, they know this world very well. And they speak very eloquently about this world. But they cannot teach how to switch, you know? So that's why their students are just... Oh, my teacher is very good, you know, but I cannot do like my teacher, you know, like that. It's not good. You should be able to do it by yourself. You should go to same world as your teacher, and you can do it. You know? So why? And until now, we could not, because we didn't know how to switch it, how to switch from A to B. And this switching is a mindfulness. So when you are mindful, then you can switch from A to B. Then in the dimension B, you can deepen your mindfulness. You can deepen your compassion. So that's why compassion and mindfulness, they have two characteristics. One is a way of switching. Another second one is a deepening. You know? So that's why our method is like this. First, we switch from A to B. And then in the realm of B, we are going to deepen this realm. You know? Then in this realm, as Prajnaparamita has sort of says, you know, there's no old age, no death. Why? Because like we are born, we become old, sick, and dying exists only in the world of air, world of ordinary mind. So the dimension of B, dimension B, nobody was born. That's why nobody is going to die. You understand? So that's why this is called deathless. There is no death. And what did Buddha say about enlightenment? He found. No, Buddha didn't say. Buddha said, of course, everything is impermanent, everything is suffering. It's not. This is just half, you know. Buddhism is just very, very pessimistic religion. It's not like that. It's just only half. Okay, everything is impermanent, everything is suffering, like that, you know. But at the same time, he said clearly he found deathlessness, the dimension of deathless, dimension of everlasting joy, you know, dimension of permanence. You know, he said, of course, clearly, this world is impermanent. This world is full of time, full of dukkha, suffering. But at the same time, he found totally different dimension, which is deathless, no suffering, permanent, like that. The point is how to go there. You know, but don't worry. From the beginning, you also belong to this dimension B. Then point is how to switch from A to B. Then this way of switching is a mindfulness. Okay? You don't have to create a deathless world. Not like that, not like that, you know. Deathless world exists. Deathless world dimension exists from the beginning, and you also belong to this one. But of course we didn't know that. We thought we are living only this world. But now you know, we know, we can switch from A to B. Okay? Everyone. You know? Everyone. Not only very special teacher. So everyone in this Buddha hall can go there. Okay. I think that's enough. Okay, we'll continue, you know. Okay, so let's have a tea meditation and please come back here.